April 29, 2020 is the Watt for Pedro show. Watford Pedro Show, happy Wednesday. I think the last one for the month. It's hard to keep track. Started off with my shining hour, John Coltrane, and then 1025, brand new from Tom Herman, who, Brother Matt, you know, we're in quarantino mode here, so Brother Matt's 3 miles away at his pad in the Love Grotto. But I'm not totally man alone because of those engineers in Estonia with their Skype software. I got Mr. Tom Herman. And we're talking to you from Cleveland, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Usually when I play in Cleveland, I play in Cleveland Heights.
And that's where I live.
Oh, really? Because I heard that David actually grew up there or something. I stay with a guy in Shaker Heights next door.
Yeah, David grew up here, so did Robert Wheeler.
Okay. Oh, the music guy in New York City.
Huh?
Yeah, okay. Wow. And anyway, you know, I've been, me and D. Boone, Georgie, that gig you guys did at the Whiskey where Scott forgot where he parked the boat, man, that changed our lot. That was a mind-blowing a half. But I want to go even further, what's your earliest music recollection?
A 100 pounds of clay.
Wow. How was that musical?
There was a song, 100 pounds
oh,
of clay.
Oh, okay.
Gene McDaniels, maybe? When I was seven, I got the flu and to keep me occupied, my parents let me use the radio. And they were playing 100 pounds of clay.
Okay. Like a folk song?
No, it was like a rockabilly. Not really a rockabilly, but an early rock and roll song.
Okay.
With 100 pounds of clay, make a man or other.
I think I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in the pad, they let you play the radio, but was there instruments?
No. When I was in grade school, I wanted to learn to play guitar, and my parents wouldn't let me because hoodlums played guitar. So I spent a year in the school band playing saxophone, and that was pretty stupid, so I quit with that.
Was it like the marching band, or was it the...
No, it was just like the school band.
Yeah.
It wasn't even as a marching band, you know. It was just... It was, you know, it was grade school kids trying to play instruments.
Oh, it's grade school. Okay, okay. Because
yeah, yeah.
Usually at that time they get you on, like, some schools, a recorder or some little flute shit.
Yeah, I'm really old, man. They didn't do that back then.
Okay, okay. Or choir, or, you know. Yeah. The marching band, though, you did have to wear the stupid outfits.
Yeah, yeah. I'm told by people that know that marching band is like one of the hardest things that you can possibly do. I've known athletes that said marching band was harder than being an athlete.
Damn. Well, yeah, because the big wool suits. And the, I heard the mouthpieces, like trumpets and French horn, was real tough to keep it on your lip.
Yeah, and, you know, like trying to keep your breath going and march at the same time. Phew.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of parallel process.
Yeah.
So,
what
was the first record you bought for yourself?
St. Louis Blues by Pat Boone.
Whoa. 45.
Yeah.
And in those days, where'd you get it? Like at the drugstore? Is that where? Remember they used to sell the records? Not, there wasn't really record stores yet.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town. I really can't remember where I found it. But, Erie, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Yeah, by the... Just over the border, right? From
Halfway between Cleveland and Buffalo.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I drove through it from Canada.
Yes, that's a place to drive through.
Okay.
It's a good place to be from.
But the canal, right? I mean, that was an important deal, with you know, when the country
started. I don't even think the Erie Canal came out there. I don't even know where the Erie. I think the Erie Canal came out.
It goes to Buffalo, right?
Either Buffalo or Cleveland, yeah.
Yeah. But it was important because it linked all the Great Lakes to the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
Andy Jackson hated it. He thought it was a lame project.
Yeah, well, I guess he was wrong.
Yeah, of course. But it was in the old days. I was talking to some guy about DIY, and I said, you know, Walt Whitman, 1855, he put out his own book. I mean, there was things getting going a while ago. What was the first gig that you went and saw?
Boy, you're really working me, aren't you? The Four Seasons.
Okay. Wow. Okay. What was that like? Was it like a review where they had a bunch of bands?
Or was it No. Okay. It was a concert. The local college brought them in. Yeah. Back then, you know, nobody went to Erie. You know, nobody.
No tour stop.
No tour stop in Erie. But for some reason, the college brought in the Four Seasons. And so I, for whatever reason, went to see them. They were pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, all that falsetto stuff. Yeah, that was that was cool.
I think New Jersey, right? I think those guys.
Yeah, I think so. One or the other.
So, yeah, a little sax in school. But what about the after school? Was any of your buddies, you do the bedroom band, the basement, or the garage band?
Not till I think I was a junior in high school.
Okay. And by this time, you got on a guitar, right, despite your parents' reservation?
Yeah, well, I started on the bass, and their reservations. Yeah.
What made you want to go on the bass?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Because most people, especially in the less younger days, they'll say nobody else wanted to do it. But you liked it. All right. I'm kind of biased. So, what was the first one you got?
A Harmony. One of those single cutaway, semi-hollow Harmony basses. I think there were like three or four brands that used the same bass, but mine was a Harmony.
Okay. Yeah, Dan Electro. They were made for Sears and Montgomery Ward and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's the one.
And what about Amp? I'm curious about Amp.
Oh, I don't know, man. It was just this little bass amp that had 212s in it, maybe. I don't even know what it was. I can't remember.
Ron Astrid started on bass, he told me.
Did he?
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of good guitar guys come from bass.
Well, you know, it gives you a different angle of attack, you know. Instead of learning the chords first and all that stuff, you learn the rhythm of it and you know. How to move things along.
Yeah, you know,
at least that's.
It looks like a guitar, but it's kind of like more like a drum.
Yeah, kind of halfway in between.
Yeah, I mean, its notes are there in the kick and then the toms, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's lines. You know, everything is lines.
Yeah. Not a lot of chord. If you do get chordy, it gets kind of muddy.
Especially back then.
You know, I have got to record an album at Tony's Pad in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony told me that this tune that I'm going to play next was a big deal. So I'm going to ask you about it, but I'm going to play it right now. It's called Steve Canyon Blues.
I first got in the fight, watching Steve Canyon making all this light. He'd fly around and flash a smile. I'd call him boy in blue, but I could see he wasn't telling everything I knew. When I was young, back in school,
I never ever fought, at least not with my feet and fists, but often with my thoughts. I slapped the dude upside the head and up against the wall, but I couldn't help that, a pang of shame, a madness. Alone. You've got too many little boys. Too
Thank you.
The tired plane, the bravas white and yellow elastic, and held to foam cones, the corners triangular shaped pyramids, three edges made one point, starfish and emery boards, triple D cupped and poked to a point. The main character was composed into a bow that broke first in the front and equal on adjacent sides. American Cowboy was approaching on a collision course. His hands groped, outstretched, three digits, triangular, to the front nail. A line was drawn from the middle finger to the knuckle of the index finger across the middle finger into the third, creating a perfect arrow with an imaginary front point. We'll be right back. Watford Pedro Show. Steve Canyon Blues, Tom Herman. And that goes way back, right? Early 70s?
Yeah, yeah. Probably somewhere around 72, 73, something like that.
Okay, now when Tony told me that, I thought of the big picture of the tune listening to it. And it does have kind of the journey where the middle part has the freak out and then it comes back. I could see the, well, once he mentioned that to me, between 32nd and Tokyo in that, you know, you got your tune, yeah. You got your freak out, you come back to the tune. And you kind of established that with the Steve Canyon. Now, Steve Canyon, he made a bunch of corny songs and shit, right, in those days?
Steve Canyon was a cartoon hero. He was a jet
That's
pilot.
That's what it was. He's a cartoon guy.
And a couple things you should know about that song is that I did not play lead guitar on that song.
Okay.
That was a guy named Rick Callister. I played rhythm and bass on that song.
Yeah, because I don't know if people know, but before Tony, you and Tim used to switch, right? Guitar.
Yeah, well, me and Tony used to switch, too.
Oh, wow.
I played bass on the Codex and New Picnic Time.
Oh, Codex, told me, I think he played the piano.
Yeah, he played guitar and piano, and I played the bass.
Okay, that's really interesting. When he told me that, I couldn't believe that. But it was very collaborative, the way you guys put together that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, I played on bass on some stuff with Tim. He switched to guitar and I played bass. In fact, if that band would have kept going, I think I probably would have ended up being the bass player.
You know, I saw Tim in DNA.
Did you?
Yeah, they came and played the Hong Kong Cafe. And uh-huh. It wasn't the Oregon version, it was the one with him. And uh-huh. Almost all the tunes started with him doing a little trip, and then the other dudes would come in, the lady and the and Ardo with the... They were trippy. That's a trippy power trio. And I don't know if this is true, but did Tim have trepanate? Did he have holes drilled in his head?
Not that I know of. Not when I knew him.
No, this is like he was working at a Strand or some bookstore in New York City. Somebody told me there's a way of drilling holes, not all the way through, but enough where the brain's exposed so you're always like on L, tripping, you know.
Yeah, I would not be able to comment on that one.
Okay, let's get back to your journey in music. Did your band with your buddies, did they have a name? Did you do originals? Did you try to copy off records?
We played, it was a copy band. It was called The Penny Dreadful, which some people thought it was pretty dreadful, but it was The Penny Dreadful. And, it was high school in a small town. It wasn't that good, but it was okay.
Do you remember?
I actually learned to play and was in a band in like 3 months. I really picked it up fast.
Okay. Do you remember the first gig the Penny Dreadfuls had?
No, I don't. We didn't play very many. Okay. I really can't remember too many of them at all.
I'm always curious about that. Whether I ask people, were you scared? Some people are like balls out, and some people are like me, scared to death.
Really?
Yeah, look on the other band members.
I've never been one to get scared before a gig.
Oh, wow. Okay. Bob Mole, I think he's ever been scared in his life. That guy's got so much fucking whatever. But it's not conceited. It's not, full of himself.
Yes.
But he's just not afraid. But
yeah, you don't think of it that way.
But when the Hooskers started doing gigs with them, they all three would puke before they played. But I think that was
really
the methamphetamine.
Yeah.
One time we're in the head. We're playing at UCLA, Minuteman, man. And they're just about to go on, and they first Bob starts puking, and we're in the head, so they're doing it right in the urinal. Then Grant, then Greg. It's like, whoa, what a dealio to get a gig going. All puked together. So when you after high school, Where did music take you? Did you go to school to, like, explore music that way?
No, I moved to Cleveland and met some people and, you know, did some playing. We did very few shows. And then people didn't like me because I played too fast. So that's why I started playing guitar, because all my friends were like, man, you know, like, you're pushing the guitar player and he doesn't like it. Why don't you just learn to play guitar and get it over with? Well, yeah, okay. And then I got drafted. So while I was in the Army, I just spent my spare time learning to play guitar, which was a lot harder than the bass. The bass came, you know, right away, but the guitar was, like, really hard for me to do.
Was it the little strings?
It was the little strings close together, and, you know, like, close I played together. Bass really hard and really fast, and to try to get my hand to move these little tiny motions, you know, it just really was hard for me.
Did you work bass with fingers or pick?
Fingers.
Okay.
I use four fingers.
I always wondered that, because when I hear the old singles, the Pere Ubu singles, and trying to decide who's Tim and who's you. He used a pick, so I can kind of tell.
I was like Cloud 149 and the Modern Dance version and the Streetways. I don't know, was there a recorded Streetways with Tim? I don't remember. But I played Streetways on the bass originally.
You know what? I think it might have been Tony's first single with you guys. He was telling me.
Yeah, he played bass on that, but what was it? We had a version of Modern Dance before Tony, when it was still David and Tim.
Right.
And then we had we did a version of Streetways, but I don't know if we ever recorded it. And then when, of course, you know, when the band changed and Tony came in, he, of course, you know, played the bass and I played guitar.
For example, Final Solution. That's Tim, right? Because I could hear that he's chording, he's doing octaves and fifths.
Yeah. 30 Seconds was, I think, all three of us played bass at one point or another on that one. Peter and Tim and I think we all had a spot where we played the bass.
Oh, Peter played bass too? I know he did a lot of acoustic.
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure that he played the center part. Either he played the center part or I played the center part.
Okay.
It was the noisy part.
You know, when I try to remember stuff I did on records a long time, it's hard for me to know, too. So I don't. There's no real wrong answers, okay? You just remembered wrong. Yeah, this ain't really a quiz. I like to talk about people's journey through music because I've yet to have two similar stories. Everybody's story is different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so.
People are, you know.
If you look at your thumbprint, there's a little proof there.
But
we also got a lot in common. So you met some people, Cleveland. They say you play too fast. You move over to the guitar. What was the first guitar you bought yourself?
A Melody Maker, a single cutaway Melody Maker.
Okay.
I was looking for a Les Paul. And I couldn't find, there was just no Les Pauls to be had at this time. Mm-hmm. And so I finally found a Melody Maker and I got that. And I went back to Erie, Pennsylvania for something. And there was this music store there and I went in to get some parts. I was going to like try to soup up the Melody Maker a little bit.
Yep.
Because, yeah, you know, I really wanted a Les Paul, but I couldn't find one. And the guy in the records in the music store says, You want a Les Paul? You know what? I have a Les Paul. And he brought out this Les, like, very, very early Les Paul, like 51 or 52.
Gold.
And he had taken it apart to refret it and switch the sax, and he never went back to guitar, so he never put the guitar back together again. So it was this bag of parts in a guitar case. And it was a 52 Les Paul. So I thought, whoa, man, this is mine, you know, so... that was my second guitar.
Wow. And you put it back together and...
Put it back together and then had it for a while. And I just like, you know, I'm just not good enough for this guitar. So I sold it to a friend of mine.
Oh, wow. Tony showed us Peter's red Stratocaster.
What's that?
Tony's got Peter's red Stratocaster. We saw it at the studio.
Yeah. The car I remember Peter with is that ES-335.
Okay.
And you know what? That guitar was so hard to play. His equipment was really weird.
High action.
Really hard action. Yeah. The volume was weird. You know, so the pickups responded weird. You know, the thing about Peter was he was really he could play like electric guitar stuff on the acoustic guitar.
Right.
And I think why that guitar was like that was because he was playing acoustic guitar on his electric guitar and making it sound like all noise and stuff. I don't know. I do not know how he did that. He's the only person I ever met that could play that way.
You know, Billy Gibbon, the ZZ thing, they took all that from Lightning Hopkins. He did a lot of licks on acoustic guitar, but then Billy brings it over to the electric guitar.
Yeah.
And that's probably the signature ZZ sound.
Yeah, well, you know, it pays to do that, but Peter just, like, took it to a different level because he would be playing noise and, you know, just, you know, way out stuff on an acoustic guitar. I mean, way out stuff on an acoustic guitar. Like 30 seconds over Tokyo noise kind of stuff only on an acoustic guitar.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, wow indeed.
You know, I had Frank on, right, because he put out this 5 CD thing of Peter's stuff, and we talked about a lot of this stuff, and he did have a big folk kind of thing in a trippy way for being as rock and roll as he was.
Yeah, Peter, like, really, like, was almost more folk than rock and roll to start with.
Yeah,
I mean, he took it in a place nobody else did.
And also, he had the big spirit for the town, right? He's the big cheerleader supporter.
Yeah, it's good.
I can imagine the scene was small, you know, Pedro, but we're 30 miles from Hollywood. You guys had to go a couple hundred miles to New York City, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to play the Pirate's Cove when it was called Peabody's Underground.
Oh, yeah.
On the flats. Because that's where everything was, right, in the older days.
Yeah,
I did. You know, things went through. It turned into like a frat boy kind of place around there now. Or last time I was there. Like I said, lately I've been playing in Cleveland Heights at Kathy's place. But in the 80s and stuff, I played down there in the flats. And it was probably different in the 70s, but I could tell. A little beat up.
Yeah, it was pretty beat up.
Yeah, a little beat up. But what, you guys had like a residency, right? You played there every week or something?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we would... We had a thing here in what's their names in Akron? The guys with the hats. Devo had a in Akron. And like we would go down and open for them down there and they would come up and open for us up here.
Yeah, I only played there once. There was something called Mothers or something.
Could be, yeah, I don't remember the name of the place.
It was either Akron or Kent. D-Boom bought a Telecaster. That's what you were playing when we saw you at the Whiskey. You were playing a Telecaster.
I've either had a Telecaster or something like a Telecaster for most of my time.
Okay. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, April 29, 2020. Watt Pedro Show special guest Tom Herman. Hold tight for hour two. April 29, 2020, second hour, Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you. Cause the thing is that I love you. So how come you're breaking my heart? How come I can't be apart from what's gone for us? What am I supposed to do?
Thank you.
Rod Ashton's song that he did on that Wayne Kramer compilation,
oh, yeah.
Something of Dead End Street.
Yeah.
That's one of my all-time favorite songs. I just thought that was masterful.
Yeah, he really had a guitar style. He was a great bass man, too. He's on the Raw Power, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That bass solo on Head on the Curve on Metallic KO is like,
mm-hmm.
really happened. There's a live version from a gig where Elton John, it was in Atlanta, he came on stage in a gorilla suit. James Williamson said he almost hit him with a guitar. It was kind of weird thing. Oh, I should say, we started the second hour off with the train already left station, Tom Herman. Señor al Dios y David, el Diablo Dios with Thanatos, 10% Happy, Crush by Pimps. Tom Herman with Busy Day, Busy People, Atlantis Aquarius, Centaur, Chris Burns, Dig on This, and Tom Herman with The Other Story of Fairyland. So you just put out two records.
Yeah.
One is Tom Herman, one is Herman Gray.
Yeah, one is E.
Oh, yeah, the title of the record is E, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the Tom Herman one. And then Herman Gray is what, eponymous?
No, that's Tom Herman too. But
okay.
I always wanted to change my name to Herman Gray, but everybody looks at me funny, so I never did. And you know, my name is Tom Herman, so what the heck? You know, that's who I am.
Yeah.
So I just used it as a title.
Okay.
Because it did kind of evoke what I thought the music was doing. So
compared to the E.
Well, the E was the second one.
Okay.
The first one was Herman Gray.
Gray was the first guy. Okay. Where'd you go? Did you do them in Cleveland?
I did them in my bedroom.
Yes. I love that.
I did it all in my bedroom.
But by the way, what about that Steve Canyon Blues? Where was that done? Was that done in a studio or was that done in a pad?
No, that was done in a studio. I think Agency Recording in Cleveland. Which was where the first Caribou sessions were. That was a guy named Rick Callister played guitar, and Scott played drums, and Cindy Black played synthesizer, and I played rhythm guitar and bass.
And sang.
And sang,
yeah.
If you like about that.
Yeah, I love it. It's insane. I love it. Mm-hmm. We're driving on tour in the boat, and we got that on blasting. Okay, you know, and the way I found out about it was part of some big Perubu kind of thing, and then David put little things of like side projects, Home and Garden, and So that's how I got turned on that. Okay, so when you're coming up with this, we record these two albums in your pad. What's the process? Do you just go for it, or do you make demo things?
I just go for it. Everything there is as it happened. Usually, with the Herman Gray Yeah. I go for a lot of walks, and so like I'd be listening to some jazz and something would hit me and I'd stop and I'd, you know, hum a little thing into my phone, and then I'd come home and make out a melody, you know, on whatever instrument, and then, you know, put it together from there. Usually what I do is I start either on the bass or on the drums and, you know, like do a kind of a rhythm track and a really, really basic drum track. And then, you know, then I'll go back and put whatever guitars or saxophones or whatever, you know, to fill it out. And then I'll go back, and do like drum fills and stuff like that to give the drums some real, you know, interaction. To me, the really hard part is, or the interesting part is, I'm doing this stuff like one thing at a time,
yeah,
into a computer, and I want it to have the interaction and the energy that you get from live performance. So I kind of like have to get myself in the right head to do that.
And you got a drum set and a pad there?
I got on one of my walks, I found part of a electronic drum set.
Okay.
So I brought it home and hooked it up, and I play like, you know, two or three drums.
Sure.
And then I'll plug the other stuff in, and I'll go back in and play the, you know, maybe like I'll do the kick drum and the ride cymbal, and then I'll go back and put the snare and the toms on, you know, like that.
Okay. Because I heard, like, for example, Dave Grohl told me when he did his thing where he was Man Alone, he started with the drums. I read about Stevie Wonder when he did. It was the drums first. Hey, Prince, when he would do the Man Alone stuff, drums first.
Yeah. Mine was usually the bass first, or I would put like a very, very basic drum, you know, just like kick and snare or kick and hi-hat, you know, just something to hold it together.
Yeah.
And the bass would be the first real thing. And then I'd go back and do drums to make the drums real, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So no click.
Well, there'd be a click.
Okay.
Just to keep the rhythm right. You know?
Some people don't like clicks at all, and some people, they love it. You know, I've learned how to deal with it because this, what do you call it, to trade files. Some of these guys, need a click because you don't know where the fucking one is.
Yeah, well, you know, every little bit helps, you know.
You know, I got to record with Jim Keltner, and he has a tick because they used to use a cowbell fucking thing so loud in the studio. He told, you know, like a motorcycle guy from the wind giving you a tick. He got it from a cowbell click track. I want to play, I've never seen a Caribbean sunset.
Hi, kiddies. We're the original Wolverines with some sad tales of drunkenness, drug abuse, and depravity. This little ditty is called the Hesitation Blues. One, two, three. I got my hesitating feet, hesitating shoes. Angels in the heaven sing the hesitating blues. Tell me how long will I have to wait? Can I get you now? Must I hesitate? Well, I've never been to heaven, but I was told angels in the heaven do the jelly jelly roll. Tell me how long will I have to wait? Hesitate, all right, pick it, Slim. I was born in Pennsylvania, I was raised in France. I'm a dirty old man and I wear silk pants. Tell me how long will I have to wait? Can I get you now? Sitting on the bottom with my legs sticking up. Tell me how long will I have to wait? Can I get you now? Don't forget the egg. Tell me how long will I have to wait? Can I get you now? Must I hesitate? Walk it home now.
Being emceed by Shauna here.
Pete, why don't you tell everybody who's doing things
okay,
with you?
Before we get into the next number, all you people that just turned on your radios. We got Mike Sands on piano, the exquisite Mr. Mike Sands. And we have Gut Bucket Slim. No, Pete Sinks on bass. And they're helping me out from the old days. And my name's Pete Lochner, and I'm playing guitar, clang, which you can hear. I promise I won't tune up too much between numbers. I know what that, how that gets.
Thank you.
blues is the bass, the whole center of the thing. If the bass isn't there, you know, it's like, it's not a song if the bass isn't there.
Okay, I'm right with you. I'm right with you. And, you know, and I know there's more room in the boat, so these two-piece bands and, you know, basically, what were they called, flat duo jets. But that poor, lonely kick drum, nothing.
Yeah.
Married, yeah, all by herself. We started the third hour. We didn't start off the third hour. We just played in the middle of the second hour. I've never seen a Caribbean sunset. Caribbean, yeah. Peter Lochner with Hesitation Blues. That's from that thing Frank put out. Tom Herman with the Slip and Slide. Remember those things? Like they had stakes that would like rip up your feet and shit.
Yeah.
Total nightmare. That and lawn darts, right? Those giant fucking darts. I know a guy got hit right in a ball sack with one of those. You lay in there sunning and get one of those rude awakenings. Yeah, damn. And the blank tapes with Took Too Much. And finally, 2-8, Tom Herman. Yeah, you know, some of these have numbers. Both records have number titles.
Is
that like a date?
Yeah. You know, some of them, you know, a title came to me, and some of them just, that's what it is, and so I just left the numbers there.
Okay. That's what made me kind of think they were kind of shared, but they weren't. The Herman Gray was before. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Maybe it's better because, I mean, the statement is made with the music. And maybe if you get too much side information, you can't enjoy it the same. So I don't, you know, you don't have to really answer some of these questions. They're fucking stupid. So
you know, a while back I used to listen to a lot of opera. For a couple of years I was really into opera.
Yeah.
And I found that I would listen to the opera without any information. You know, I would just listen to it over and over again without any information, like no libretto, no when it happened, nothing about it.
Yeah.
And then later on, I would go back and listen to it with the information. And that way I got like two levels of hit off of it. You know, like it was just music and then the context.
Yeah, I do that sometimes with watching movies. I just let it hit me, and then I find out about the story and the actors and director. We're at the end of the second hour, April 29, 2020, Tishwap Peter Show, special guest Tom Herman. Hang tight for hour three! April 29, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. Pedro show. We started the third hour off with Herman Gray doing Swingin' Johnny. And Kangaroo Court after that, Beyond Curiosity, Herman Gray, Jellyfish, CNP from Brendan Etter Ensemble. He is on the last edition. Orchestrated. He's a drummer, man. I like this idea of, yeah, guys, drummers, bass, but, you know, Chico Hamilton, I was reading about it, he couldn't get songwriting credits. Like, drummers can't write music. Oh, okay. Motherfuckers. Then Herman Gray with Smooed. Now, that's a, almost the way I say smooth. But what is smooth about?
Right.
What now, these days, what kind of bass do you rock and play?
I make my own instruments.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what's the latest one?
Well, my bass is a long neck with an EMG pickup. It's like neck through with a maple neck with an ebony fingerboard. Bubinga on the top and maple on the back and stuff. It's pretty nice. The neck's a little on the thin side, but it's nice.
34 inch?
Yeah, long scale.
Yeah, like a Fender.
The last guitar I built is a sort of a chambered. It looks like a solid body, but it's kind of a semi-jazz guitar because it's chambered out way, you know, a whole lot, so it's got a lot of resonance to it.
Like the back from the back, and then you put on like a cap.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and I use like the spruce like on an acoustic guitar, so that it resonates like an acoustic guitar a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, they call that the soundboard, the front piece of wood on an acoustic. This guy did an experiment where he made the side and back paper de mache to prove that like 99% of the sound comes off the soundboard.
Yeah, yeah. It all makes a difference, but yeah, the soundboard, you know, that's where a lot of it comes from.
Now, neck through. With bass guitar, I've noticed they can't be too resonant because then you get overtones confusing the fundamental.
Yeah, but with the neck through, you know, like you want it to ring for as long as you want it to ring for. So, you know, it gives you, it gets the notes there fast. You know, if it's all one piece, the notes get there fast. It's not like on a guitar with the acoustic top. It's like the body's solid, but it's the sound is fast. You know, like as soon as you pick, it's there, and it'll stay there, you know, for a long time.
I think the earliest neck throughs was the Rickenbacker.
Were they neck through?
Those are neck throughs.
My man Lenny loves those guitars, man. He has a short scale Rickenbacker that he's been playing for 30 years or something. It's still his favorite bass.
I don't know if those guys were, but the like the Chris Squire kind were. And then the Thunderbirds, the first Thunderbirds.
Were they neck through? I had a Thunderbird for a while. I liked it.
I have a non-reverse. For 2 years, they made them a little different. And they were only two-piece instead of three-piece. No neck through.
Okay.
Yeah, they're like twisted the other way, so you can get to all the frets.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Plus, it sits on your body better, I'm sure.
Yeah, 66, you know, 68, and then they went back to the old style again, because those sold even worse.
Yeah. Mine was the 76. It had the red, white, and blue.
Yeah, that's when they brought them back. Right, I remember those.
And mine was a 76. It was really a 76.
Right. That's the year I graduated high school. I remember 76 a lot. The Koreans gave us a bell we got here in Pedro for our 200th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
They ring it on 4th of July. Well, they don't really ring it. They got a big log. You know, they ain't got, Asian bells don't have clappers. So it's like a log on a chain, and they beat it.
Hang on it, yeah.
Here, I want to play Jimmy Sings from Tripod Jimmy with Lenny. Yeah.
Market Square credit card meltdown stink. Yeah, you can keep Knoxville scruffy if you have enough goddamn money to do the Market Square credit card meltdown stink. The next time I see someone covered in blood, I'm gonna volunteer to stop and think. The next time I see someone covered in blood down in Market Square, surrounded by motherfuckers doing the credit card meltdown stink, I'm gonna volunteer to stop and think, yeah. Ignorant of the various speakeasies about town, where hilarity stops and vulgarity starts, and the clowns on the frowns are all tossed around. The clowns on the frowns are all tossed around. The clowns on the frowns are all tossed around. Well, the town crier died as they tore it down. As I waited for a 50-foot stretch limo that was painted white to turn onto Central, as a Ziploc bag full of cigarettes, ketchup packets, and purple happy birthday necklace was crammed into the tip jar. It was crammed into the tip jar. It was crammed. It was crammed. It was crammed into the tip jar. Suds, willow, wussy, slug, fucky, scrub, scruffy, fuck, wuss, wuss. Ryan, will, suds, willow, wussy, slug, fucky, scrub, scruffy, fuck, wuss, wuss. A scruffy guy covering a scruffy city, yeah, go ahead, thumb through your stupid fucking vinyl, you BGD, GBD, that stands for basic goddamn generic bearded dude. I got an idea. I'm going to start a new craft brewery. It's going to be called the BGD GBDB, which stands for Basic Goddamn Generic Bearded Dude Brewery. I bet all those fucking clowns will eat there. They'll eat the beer. Yeah, wash it down with glass. Chew on that glass, you BGD, GBD, 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 BGD, GBD, BGD, GBD, BGD, BGD, GBD, GBD. Ah! Ryan Wilson, suds, willow, wussy, slug, fucky, scruff, scruffy, fuck, wuss, wuss. He said,
I'm instantly hip as I step on her toes, as I'm glued on with bullshit that drips from my nose. I'm instantly hip because I stepped all over her toes that were glued on with bullshit that drips from my nose. Yeah, meanwhile, back on the satellite, Linda's lost in the razor wire overpass. Terry's taken off her clothes, and you seriously expect me to pay $49 to join your retro hard rock t-shirt club? Linda's lost in the razor wire overpass. Terry's taken off her clothes again, and you fucking idiots expect me to pay $49 to join your fucking Westtown Mall retro hard rock t-shirt club? Fuck you. Yeah. Fuck you. Go catch the trolley down from Hot Topic and have a nice pleasant stroll while you're at it with your stupid fucking t-shirt on. Prick Dickless. Prick Dickless. The ultimate fake-out capitalist punk. The ultimate fake-out capitalist punk. You are more dead to me than an empty PBR can left to rot on the cash-only bar. Prick Dickless, you fucking fake-out capitalist horseshit punk. You are more dead to me than an empty PBR can left to rot on the cash-only bar. I'll live through earplugs, independence, and a sexy scar. Yeah, a sexy scar that leans in and murder kisses my shoulder like a hickey on a six-pack holder. I may be fading out, getting older, but my heart says I love you. Yeah, my heart says I love you. I may be fading out and getting older like a hickey on a six-pack holder. A sexy scar that leans in and murder kisses my shoulder through earplugs and eyeglasses that I found in the parking lot of the last stupid, shitty fucking dishwashing job I had. Paleos. Bunch of assholes. Don't ever eat there. Don't eat there. They're fucking assholes. My heart says I love you. Yeah, my heart says I love you. Yeah, my heart says I love you. So I held the door open for the guy selling roses and slammed it on that new money smile that grows colder and colder and colder and colder. Yeah, I held the door open for the guy that sells the roses. And you slammed it in his face. I held it open. I'll slam it on your fucking new money smile. That's so fucking cold. It's so fucking cold. It's so fucking cold. It's when your sacred space is a battlefield of real estate moguls and shady investors. Yeah, when your sacred space is a battlefield of real estate moguls and shady investors, you don't need a decoder ring or x-ray specs to sniff out the goddamn imposters. The goddamn imposters. You don't need a decoder ring or x-ray specs to sniff out the imposters. True posers have wingmen. I prefer to be stranger. Shot down like an enigma, riddled with danger. When the world is your oyster, you'll have trouble tracking down steady gainful employment. True story. Maybe I'll get a job spit finding shoe trucks. Maybe I'll get a job spit shining food trucks. Because when... once you think you've seen it all, you're dead, you're fucked. Maybe I'll get a job spit shining food trucks. Because once you think you've seen it all, you know you're dead, you're fucked. I'll sniff out the goddamn imposters who say the profit to be made is fortunately sizable. We must therefore make everything unrecognizable. The imposters, the fucking real estate moguls and all their stupid fucking horse shit shady investor fucking friends say the profit to be made is fortunately very sizable. We must therefore make everything around here unfucking recognizable. What the hell are we gonna do when all of the old city is nothing but new? What the fuck are we gonna do, folks, when all the old city is nothing but new? What the hell are we gonna do when all of the old city is nothing but new? What the hell are we gonna do when all of the old city is nothing but new? Yeah, take toting scavenger hunt hunting idiots, 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 idiots. Yeah, you can keep Knoxville scruffy if you make enough goddamn money. If you make all the money, you can keep Knoxville so scruffy you can make it. You can make shit. You can be a maker down in Market Square with your credit card meltdown stink. You can tell all your fucking friends, next time I see someone covered in blood, I'm gonna volunteer to stop and think. I'm not gonna actually fucking help them. No. Can't help nobody covered in blood. Uh-uh. That's against the law. In the new old city, in the new old city, you just keep to yourself. Of the heap of the Hard Rock Retro T-Shirt Club. That's what they sound like when they take their pictures in front of the deer's head on the casualty bar and go, ooh, we're scavenger hunters. Oh, yes. Oh, can I get my money back? Hey, can I slide in here for free? No, I can't. What do you mean? I mean, that's a music lover's question. I love music, so I should get it for free, right? No, you fucker. That's a music hater's question. You should keep walking across the bridge. Keep going till you're down in Maryville. And keep going once you're there until you're down across the border into Georgia. And then keep walking still further until you're down into the Gulf of Mexico. And keep fucking walking until you're out in the middle of the ocean. And keep walking until you're fucking drowning. I just moved here last week.
people we heard Jimmy sings, Tripod Jimmy. Actually, Tripod Jimmy was a dog, right?
Tripod Jimmy was two different things. Tripod Jimmy was a dog, and Tripod Jimmy was a little cassette player mounted on a tripod.
Oh, yeah, you guys would have sounds. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Okay, it was the name of a recorder, too. Okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was a three-legged dog. Tripod Jimmy was a three-legged dog.
And what I remember about Lenny was he was Pittsburgh, right? And a poet.
No, he was clear. It was Erie and a poet.
Oh, okay, Erie and a poet. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the first record was recorded in Erie, huh?
That's right.
All right. New Old City from Omfu. Some stuff from Knoxville. I had on the show last week. Herman Gray with Romance and D. Drill a Hole, Bark. And finally, Cabin Fever, Tom Herman. What's next for you, Tom?
Oh, I don't know. I'll probably not do much for a while, and then I'll get the urge and I'll start back up on some other thing, you know. Something will catch my interest and I'll do it. I'll probably do a few more, you know, of this kind of Herman Gray-y thing.
I love, you know, it, the man.
Jazz-based and electronic jazz-based stuff.
Yeah, it's for me, it's just music, and I love it. It's just got so much person in it.
Yeah.
My music these days, I don't hear the person, man. I hear it, and I love it, man. And if people want to find you on the internet, they can go to these Bandcamp sites.
Uh-huh.
Okay. People like Tom Herman, Bandcamp, check it out. I heard on May 1st.
Bandcamp is on May 1st is going to do a thing where all the money goes to the artist.
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
They're kind of bitching people. Much different than the other, whatever, shills. Tom, I want to apologize for being stumbled talk because it is a big honor for me. I'm really nervous not wanting to say a stupid thing. But
well, man,
thank you so
not.
Much for being on the show. And any music that you come up with, can you come back on the show and let's talk about it?
Yeah, sure, man. You do way more cool music stuff than I do, man. As far as the two of us, you're the man here.
Well, look, you've inspired me since I was a teenager. Okay, so, yeah, I won't say anything stupid or anything, but thank you so much for talking to me about this. And please come on again with the new music. I think you got fucking buttloads to come out, you know? And especially this way of doing The Man Alone, you just pile it up in layers. It's not all bad new days. That would have been really hard to do in the older days, but we can do that now.
Yes, we can. It would have been nearly impossible in the in the old days.
Right.
You know,
so,
using crappy 4-channel cassette players and stuff like that.
No. So I look forward. Like Herman Gray, are you going to keep that concept?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see.
Wait for it.
You never know.
Right, wait for it. What?
Yeah,
wait for it. Okay, people, thanks so much for being on the show, Tom. People, it's been April 29, 2020 edition of Watt Peter Show. Keep your powder dry.